Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today, we have Melissa Palmer, who was highly recommended from Doug Cunnington, who has been a 2 or 3-time guest now, I think, on this podcast. But she was a former student of his, and she is now, well, she went full-time with her portfolio of websites in July last year. She runs about 22 or 24 websites herself, which is just nuts. So we go into the weeds of how she goes about that, her processes around content, updating content, different things she does around AI, her thoughts on the future with AI and the SERPs and what she's doing, her monetization strategies, just everything of her process of building these sites and running these sites and what she's trying to achieve doing this. And we kind of go through a little bit of, you know, should you just focus on one or two sites, or is having a range of sites a good option or a better option? So it was an interesting chat, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Melissa Palmer. Welcome, Melissa.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for coming on. You were well recommended from a 2 or 3-time guest now on here, Doug Cunnington. And obviously a former student of his, so he put you forward here, and you've been on his show a few times. So do you want to maybe give a brief background about yourself, and we'll go into some niche website questions?
Yeah, absolutely. So hi, everybody. It's so nice to meet you all. Thank you all for listening. My name is Melissa Palmer. I started with websites in general. Well, okay, like way, way back in like the GeoCities days and all that kind of stuff, right? But I got serious again about it in 2014. My background is in technology. I was an engineer. I still am an engineer, but I don't work in the tech industry anymore. And my first big website that I actually made money off of was a tech-based website. I kind of used it as my resume to get that next job I really wanted in the tech space. And then I started taking it a little more seriously and exploring other ways to do things and make money with websites. And I stumbled across Doug's course. I took it and I started to take starting a bunch of niche sites and other types of websites, and I've kind of been hooked ever since, to the point where I actually left my corporate job in July of 2022 to kind of focus on the websites and helping other people do this full time.
Damn, that's awesome. That's the dream, I think. Yeah, everyone listening to this is striving towards or has achieved it and is doing so. Yeah, I mean, it's the financial freedom, or the freedom of doing what you like and just doing your stuff online.
Exactly.
It's kind of what everyone wants to do. But so do you want to maybe dive into a little bit about your site? How many sites do you currently have? I think from skimming through your other stuff, you've got like 12.
It's ridiculous. So technically, I think I have 22 or 23.
Holy shit.
But
okay.
Let me break that down a little bit.
Yes,
right? Please. Let me break that down. I have like, I would say maybe like 3 or 4 like big ones, right? Those are the ones that are pretty much bringing me good income. I would say I have another 5 to 6 that I are more active sites that I'm working on and trying to build. And the other ones, like everybody brings me a few bucks here and there, right? But I really like to just like mess around and experiment. I got really hooked on SEO in 2014. So I like to try things, experiment things. Like I'll start a website, throw out 50 posts and leave it for 6 months and see what happens. go back, optimize content, add more. So for me, a lot of it is experimenting, having some fun with it too.
Wow. Okay. Are they all in completely different niches as well? All 22 sites?
Yes. Oh, yes. I like to cook. So I do have a couple of food blogs in different areas, yeah. But most of them are just like completely just different niches, different things.
Wow. Okay. Before going to some of your bigger site stuff, are you writing all the content for the site? You mentioned you just put up 50 posts. I'm assuming you have a team that does that.
I don't have a team, but I do use writers, and I have used like content services and stuff like that. I don't use AI to write completely. I don't know if we want to go down that path, but I will do like some AI assisted type of stuff. But I don't like just go ask some AI program to write a blog post for me. Like, I don't do that.
Yeah. So what's your process then around AI assisted content? Because that's the big thing. That's the big thing in the space right now. I'm sure you've seen people are either fully against AI, or they're using AI human assisted, or people are experimenting and just pumping out thousands of posts with AI, not editing them, and still seeing good results, some of them, at least initially. So how are you going about that process?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm more on the AI assisted side, where I love AI to give me ideas. Like I use a couple of examples over and over, but let's say I have a food blog and I'm looking for like side dishes for chicken or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I look at the SERPs and everybody's like saying 50 side dishes for chicken. And I'm sitting there going, I can't think of 50 side dishes for chicken. Yeah. That's the time I'll go to AI and say, give me 50 side dishes for chicken. And then I'll start going through them, keep what I like, get rid of what I don't, and say, okay, give me more ideas for side dishes of chicken, right? Like that kind of stuff. Giving me ideas in general, like I have a blog about food and I focus on chicken recipes. What kind of chicken recipes are popular in the summer? What should I write about? And like, you know, I use Jasper and ChatGPT mostly, and they're really good about giving you ideas. So it's almost like something to bounce ideas off of and get ideas for and some level of content. But if I do actually use output, and I do sometimes, I edit it heavily, because I feel like the product you get from just 100% AI isn't a good experience for your readers, right? Like, it's if so I'm bad. Reading it and I'm going like, that's not what I want to do, right? I want to actually provide valuable information. And I don't think AI is at the point, even with GPT-4, which is supposed to be, you know, the latest and greatest, whatever, that's not even at the point where it's writing in a way that makes sense to most humans or your target audience. So that's why I'm big on, it's good for ideas and maybe getting the skeleton, but you do need to do heavy editing and make sure you're serving your reader at the end of the day.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, maybe if you can dive into your editing process of the context. I know a lot of people talk about human assisted AI or edited AI, but no one actually goes down what the process of editing AI actually is. So what actually happens on the page when you're going through this?
Yeah. So I start by reading the article end to end and just trying to get a feel for it. And then I just pretty much go through it and change things here and there, change sentences. Maybe I'll reorder something and just really make it make sense. Like, it just writes awkwardly sometimes, right? So I'll rephrase things, I'll change things around, and then I'll do another final. I'll do this a couple times, like go through it, read it. Is that section good? Is that section good? The conclusions and the introductions from AI I find to be super, super weak in general. So generally speaking, intros, conclusions, any kind of like transition area, I will usually just like not even bother and just write them myself, just because like it just doesn't. Like, how many times can you say, today in this blog post, we will explore the best chicken recipes you can. Like, no, don't do that.
Yeah. And the worst part is as well, you go through the content, it's every second sentence is, it's important to over and over. It's crucial to do this.
Yeah, we
and
know
it,
that. Like, thank bloats you. The thank
sentence,
you.
Like, you can just remove that whole part of the sentence and the sentence is short.
Yeah, it adds a lot of junk. It's just, ugh. Like, I wouldn't trust it for trying to, like, if I want to go after, like, try to get, like, my brain is not working. Answer target. So that's not the right term. My brain's not working today. But if I want to go after a featured snippet, that's it.
Yep, there we go.
Like, I'm not going to trust AI to go after a snippet for me. You know what I mean? Like, that's not going to work so well.
Yeah, what I've found actually is if I get it to write, so I'll feed it the prompt and I'll feed it the headings and I'll feed it the summary heading. And that summary heading in the first output usually gives me a semi-good answer target paragraph for the feature snippet, and I'll put that at the very top as the feature snippet.
Yeah,
might need some editing, but at least because it summarized everything I put in the post. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's a good tactic.
Yeah, that's something I've been playing. I've been playing around with a little bit of AI assisted stuff on an old site of mine that's just been sitting there. I'm like,
I don't trust it at this point. on anything that like exactly. I would consider like my major sites. I'm not just gonna like start blowing out AI content on like my big sites. Like, you know.
No, exactly. So yeah, I've been seeing some pages ranking with it as well. So it's interesting. I don't know if it will.
I'm tempted. But... I will say that I'm tempted to just go like build a trash AI site and see what happens. Like part of me is like, I just want to experiment. Cause like I said, I love to experiment. Part of me is like, it just feels so wrong at the same time. I don't know if I can actually go through with it.
No, fair enough. So is your first site still running then? The one you started in 2014?
Yeah, it is. It's still running. Yep.
Okay.
It's got ads on it. I still update it from time to time. Not as much as I probably should. I could probably do more with it. The big thing for me in going full time was realizing how badly under monetized I am in many areas, quite honestly.
Okay.
Because, you know, I had a full time job. Yeah. So I had a full time job, right? And I was working on my sites if I took off time from work or like an hour a night, maybe. So it's not like I had a tremendous amount of time. So when I kind of transitioned and I'm starting to look at this as a business, I'm like, okay. I'm way under monetized. Like, for example, I do display ads on a bunch of sites. That's fine. But like, especially on the affiliate side and like the digital product side, you know, some posts like just didn't even have any affiliate links or they weren't, I could call them out better and add more to them and stuff like that. So kind of going through that process of, all right, let me just start with like the highest traffic stuff. Oh, look, the top 10 posts have no affiliate links. That's probably really dumb. I should go back and fix that. Stuff like that, that because it was, you know, it was a hobby and I was making money with it. It was nice. But I wasn't good. When I started, I didn't have the mindset of I want to quit my job one day and make money. So when I coach people, one of the first questions I ask them is like, why are you doing this? And, you know, everybody has a different reason. But if there's any inkling of, you know, oh, I want to, you know, use it to just, you know, be able to take my family on a nice vacation or maybe down the road, I'm like, we need to talk about monetization on day one. Even if you don't implement things, you need to know what you can do. So as you move forward and you start to get traffic and you start to make this more seriously, you can immediately be ready to pivot if you haven't started that way. So that was like the biggest thing for me, like being in the mindset of this is a business, this isn't a hobby anymore.
Yeah, no, for sure. And how much traffic is that tech site getting?
Tech site, I think, is around like 30,000 page views. And that's just like old stuff sitting there. Like, I don't work on it as much as I said, and I keep on saying I'm going to, but I'm kind of like, well, some of the other ones are more fun right now. But like, it just kind of sits there. It hangs out. It got hit by a couple years ago, got hit by a nasty Google update, and it came back. But it just kind of sits there and brings me some money every month, so I can't really complain.
Nice. So let's go into some of your bigger sites then. Obviously, your more fun ones in there.
Yeah.
How much? Then maybe dive into a little bit of traffic numbers, post how many posts, how old they are, just a few different bits and pieces there so we get a general idea of them. And then maybe dive into some monetization stuff too.
Let's see. Okay. So my biggest site is about 150,000 page views. And I'm going to talk about my tactic in a little bit more because part of me is like, I'm definitely going for more of a portfolio phase. And it's like, I work on the site, I add content, but I'm not sure I want that single site with a million views. To me, that's a little bit too risky. Like, I've had Google updates roll through and decimate sites. Like, So I was doing some pretty, like I said, I have an SEO background. So I was doing some pretty, like, just money grab stuff, quite honestly, with affiliate sites. Like, I would just build sites and I knew what kind of keywords I could rank really fast. And it was just like, it was a money grab. Like, there was like no info content. It was just like, best of this, best of this, best of this, right? And it worked really great until it didn't. And then when the product review update started, they just like kind of kill them. Like, they're still there every once in a while, whatever. But it was like, the traffic went down to nothing on one of them. I was at like 15,000 page views, 20,000 page views on one. And then overnight it was like gone. I was like, well, that's unfortunate. Like that could be kind of problematic. So I tend to go a little smaller. And that's something I'm still trying to think of. Like, do I really want to build a site to a massive amount? Or is that just too much risk for me? Right. And so like, look at my life and all that kind of stuff. My background, like in technology, I did do a lot in the like security space, data protection space, disaster recovery space. So I have like a very trained mind to look at risk of things. So that kind of comes back and I'm like, hey, do I really want to do this? But that is my biggest site. I actually bought that. I do a combination of buying and building. So that, oh God, that has a ton of posts on it. It probably has like 1,000 posts on it or something ridiculous like that.
Okay.
I've had it for, I've had it for a number of years. I've added more content. I've culled the herd. My big thing is updating content, right? Mm-hmm. I go and I update the content. This particular site was like the first one I bought, and I doubled the organic traffic in 6 months just because I went and I updated old content. Right. I wasn't really adding new stuff, maybe like a couple things here and there, but I was really focusing on doing more with what I had. And that's something that I keep doing, right? I go back to all of my sites on a regular basis and I start optimizing the content. If I buy a site, that's like the first thing I do is I kind of run it through my content optimization protocol, and I see like pretty good gains, right? If Google thinks your blog post is about something, well, then you should give it what Google thinks it's about and say, yeah, Google, you're right. Here's some more information. And Google seems to really like that, I've noticed. So I have that one. I have the tech one. I've got another one in like the almost 50,000 page view range. And then I have a whole herd of things in around like the 10K range that are just kind of sitting there. I'm working on right now. Some have display ads, some don't, but those are kind of like my next crop of sites, I would say, I'm trying to bring up to higher levels. Mostly not monetized. Some are monetized with affiliate stuff. Other ones just kind of sit there, right? And then I do have a number of sites like maybe like, you know, 3K page views, but those are the more heavy affiliate sites. And when I started doing math on the effect of kind of like RPM or, you know, how much revenue I'm getting per 1,000 page views, they were like super high just because of the affiliate sales. So I'm like, I don't feel the need to put display ads on them at this level, right? I kind of look at it as, what is the purpose of this site? What am I going to do? And you can have low traffic sites with quality content and natural types of reviews, right? I feel like the best of whatever posts just don't really work so well anymore. With natural content that lends itself to selling something or kind of promoting something to the reader, and they can convert really, really well even with not a lot of traffic, right? So it's not always like a traffic game. Of course, you need some, right, to get the eyes on it. But it really depends on, you know, the niche, how hard it is, the popularity, right? How hard it is to convince someone to buy that product, all that kind of stuff. So I kind of have everything with different strategies and different ranges of traffic. Yeah. And I do things different way based on kind of the intent of the site.
Interesting. So what are some examples of, you mentioned obviously like those natural reviews kind of leading them to the product. You mean they're not full on product reviews, or they're more info content?
Exactly. They're not full on product reviews. Okay. It's more of like a how-to type thing, right? And here's the things that you can use to do this, to do what I'm teaching you or explaining you. So I have two examples, right? I use the chicken recipes and I use chainsaws as examples all the time. So I'm like, I don't know. It's a funny example, right? Because I don't know what to use. Chicken and chainsaws. So for example, like if it's like how to sharpen your chainsaw blade for a steel whatever, that's a question people might be asking, but so you might give them the tools to sharpen the blade, or you might just give them a link to buy a new blade and be like, you know, this can be time intensive, it could be dangerous, you can just buy a new one here, blah, 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 stuff like that, right? So it's kind of serving the reader and answering their questions, but adding things that they might be interested to or might be relevant to them in the article as well.
Gotcha. Would you still write the product review to link them to that, to like, if you want more information on that product?
Yeah, it depends on what it is, and it depends on the specific product. Sometimes I will, sometimes I won't. It kind of just like depends when I kind of take a good look at it and see how competitive it is and that kind of stuff. And it depends on the cost of the product too, right? And kind of, is it worth it to go and do that? I'm very big into like nitty gritty tracking my content. So I don't know if you've heard of this tool. Have you ever heard of Google Data Studio? They renamed it to Looker Studio.
Yeah.
So I'll use that. And I'll build out filters for, okay, here's a group of 5 posts I write. Let me keep my eye on them in an easy way, right? I go to a dashboard and I see how are they doing impressions-wise in Google? Are they getting clicks? Are they getting traffic from other sources too, to kind of say, how is this content doing over time? And when you do that enough, you can almost get a feeling for, okay, this site, if I write a certain quality of keyword, it's really going to take me like 4 to 5 months to start seeing decent traffic. And I see that on a lot of sites where I used to be able to publish and instantly things would pop. I'm seeing like a somewhere, depending on like the type of site, right, DA, age, all that kind of stuff, how strong it is, I'm seeing like a 3 to 5 month range of publishing content and really having it to take off lately.
Interesting. And then with the Data Studio, is that connected to the Universal Analytics, or is that connected to GA4 now?
I haven't tried it with Universal Analytics. Yeah, okay. I have to try that actually. Oh, no, I'm using Universal. I have to try GA4 because I tried to force myself to use GA4 and it lasted for a week and I hated it.
Hard.
But like we all know it's coming and we have to deal with it. And I actually do want to play with it with Data Studio because I feel like that might be a way to make it more bearable. Like if I can build my dashboards that I like to see, then I don't have to. You know, it's like change with anything, right? Everybody got so used to Universal Analytics. Then you use this tool, then it just doesn't seem that accurate to me in real time. Like that's the thing that bothers me. I don't know. I don't like GA4, but we don't really have a choice.
We don't. Google's mercy with that one.
We don't really have a choice. So we're going to learn to like it.
Yeah, exactly. But you mentioned about content optimization. I think updating content, most people kind of neglect it. I think if you're buying a site, in my experience, it's even harder because you didn't write the content. So it's like almost like it's you're editing someone else's writing and style and you're like, you don't not sure where to add what. So how do you go about that process? Maybe with your own content, and does it differ when you're editing,
say, a new I love to write. Like I'm an engineer, but I'm also a writer. Like I had like probably one of my favorite jobs ever was I was writing design architecture guides and deployment guides. And they were like 300 page guides on how to like do something technical. And I really loved it. Like I love to write. So it might be a little different for me. It doesn't mind me. Like I don't care if someone else wrote it. I can still edit it, whatever. That does take some getting used to, right? Yeah. And part of the thing I'll look at when I buy a site is I will browse the content and get a feel for it. And if I don't like it, I'm not going to buy it. Even if it looks like a great deal and has a lot of potential, I'm like, if I don't personally want to deal with this, it's just not, don't do it, right? So it's a lot of just kind of, you know, hammering down and hammering through it. It is a lot of work, but you see the gains. And again, I use Data Studio to track things, right? Because you want to see the results of your work and it can take a while. And it's just kind of like, it's like a muscle. Like once you get used to doing it, it's not that hard. So, but I'll do stuff like I'm big on batching because I've spent so much time not having time, right? So I'm very big on batching things. So I'll go do like a ton of keyword research up front, even for content updates. And then I'll just be like, all right, now we're going to hammer through these. We're going to hammer through them. We're going to update the content. We'll see if images need to be updated too. Do I need more Pinterest pins, stuff like that. So like I kind of have like a whole kill sheet where I'll just go through all of my steps and just do it. It's a lot of work. A lot of this, see, that's like almost like a misconception I feel like some people have is like, oh, like being a blogger is super easy and I can make a ton of money.
Just hit
the Starbucks. Yeah, you can, but it's not easy. It's still, like people think that's it, right? It is a lot of work. And a lot of times, especially if you're starting a new site, or you're trying to get traction on an older site, like it's a long, slow grind. It really is. And it can get frustrating when you're not seeing results as fast as you would want. But it is a lot of work. So a lot of people, I think, almost get into it thinking, there's too many people being like, this is easy, make money from home while you sleep, blah, 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 blah. And they don't talk about the work you need to put in, right? Like people just kind of, you know, they gloss over that point. Like, oh, I'll be a superstar. This will be great. No, there's a lot of work that has to happen first. And you will get there, right? You will get there one day if you keep grinding it out, but it is a grind.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Everyone I've talked to is in the same boat, just that almost like a constant hamster wheel of writing content, publishing content, updating content.
Write it, publish it, update it, and then go start over again.
Exactly.
And maybe do some YouTube if you like really want to get into like diversification of traffic and income and stuff like that. I'm not big. I'm trying to get better with videos. I'm just not big on it. I don't know why. I need to work on that.
Yeah, I feel I'm doing 3 videos a week now for YouTube for one of my sites.
That's good.
I'm just pumping the shit out of
one of them. Is it okay? So let me ask you, what's the way to get going? Do you just like start doing it and it gets easier, or like because I'm still in the stage where I make a video, I'll record a couple, then I gotta edit them, I gotta update them. By the time I do all that, I'm like, oh, this is terrible. Blah blah blah. Like, got any tips for someone trying to get more started on that arena?
I just do the lowest form. What would you call it? It's like the lowest amount of work possible to get it done. So I'll shoot it on my phone and I'll pretty much, like if I'm doing something, I'll try to do it pretty much like one take.
Yeah,
and then
I
it's
try
just
to
like
do
editing
it,
the small bits, and then it's just that's easy. I can pump like those out, or I've got the whiteboard behind me. You can see some stuff on there from a previous video. I can do that because I can do it just right here. One of them is a podcast as well. So a podcast is easy because I don't have to do anything. I have a guest on, I publish it on my channel. I do that one live as well on my channel as well.
Oh,
so it's like
nice.
A fourth video. So a live plus the podcast recording that goes the next week plus 2 extra videos. So it's like I'm just trying to pump the shit out of it. But good. I'm just trying to make it in the point where it's not so time consuming to have to set up all these different lights, set up a set.
That's the thing. Like, I gotta set up the lights. I gotta do the thing. Yeah.
That's the problem. And then, I have to get maybe, I don't know, B-roll footage of this and that. It's like, no, I don't even bother. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even do effects on, like, I used to sometimes edit some zoom in and out stuff, and I just don't even bother. I just literally just cut the gaps out, and then that's the video. Maybe overlay some other stuff, but that's it.
So pretty basic. Don't kill yourself over it. I'm like one of those people where I tend to be a perfectionist. And I'm like, I'm probably putting way too much effort into this, and just I shouldn't be doing it this way.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I'm just doing this so that once the YouTube channel starts making enough money, then just get an editor, and then they can do all that.
That's a good point. And that's good motivation for a lot of these things, right? Yeah. Is can I get it to a certain point where I can hand off the stuff I really don't like to other people? And that's totally worth it, right? To make your life better, to make your life easier.
Exactly. But coming back to that content optimization, what are you adding into or removing or anything like that within a piece of content when you're updating it?
It depends, right? It depends on the piece of content. So I'll run it through, I'll look on Search Console, I'll run it through Ahrefs, I like Key Search too to mess around with. And I didn't actually start using Key Search until more recently, but I noticed a lot of people who are more getting started use it because it's cost effective, right? And probably the biggest game changer I tell people is like getting a paid SEO tool, right? Getting a paid keyword research tool. It just saves you so much time. It pays for yourself. So I started using Key Search because I've just been working with a lot of people more at the beginning of their blogging journey. And I'm like, okay, we need to start with like a tool here. And it's very cost effective and it's pretty good. So I'll kind of run the piece of content through all those tools and see what am I seeing, right? What are there questions coming up that I'm not ranking well for that I could add? Am I getting other ideas? I'll go back and do a competitive research. And, you know, sometimes you know, I've been doing this for a long time, but sometimes I'll see almost I got the intent a little wrong, right? Like I thought I was aiming for this keyword, but it turns out somehow I aimed for something slightly differently. So just kind of changing things around, modifying things. Like I said, it's one of those things, the more you do it, the more you get used to it. But it's important to like check in on that content, check in what other people are doing, because we all do it, right? Everybody's going to put in the keyword and look at the SERPs and see what everybody else is writing. Everybody's going to try to do it better. It's a fact of life, right? So a lot of it is, okay, so I had a piece of content. It was doing well. And now it's not. And you'll like, you see messed up stuff when you start looking. It's like, look, someone like almost completely copied my post and just regurgitated it. It happens all the time. So now it's like, okay, now I got to go get my keywords and my ranking back. So I'm going to go add more stuff to mine because either I've done my research or I'm an expert in the area or I've found an expert in the area, right? So now I got to go make it better again. So yeah, it is a little bit of a hamster wheel. I feel like it is getting a little more competitive, I think. I think part of that might be maybe almost from the pandemic, right? I think a lot of people were stuck at home and looking for something to do. That's when I really got into food blogging, actually, was during the pandemic and food photography. I wasn't doing a very good job at it before, let's put it that way, but I had this time suddenly and I was home all the time and I had a really nice camera. So I'm like, all right, let me take like a serious run at this and start doing it. But I feel like a lot of people did that. And then kind of the flexibility of, you know, people got used to working from home maybe and had to go back to their offices and went, this really is not cool working for the man anymore, right? So I think we're seeing like a big influx of people getting started or different things. And it's getting, I feel like it is getting a little more competitive out there. Again, it depends on the niche, right? So.
Yeah, no, for sure. Have you thought about, because obviously you run a bunch of sites, doing a bunch of sites within the same niche? So you can kind of dominate the SERPs doing that?
I've thought about that actually. And I have like one niche in mind that I would probably try that for, but I've never really gone through with it. That's something I've looked at, right? Because if you think about it, right? If I'm three different positions on the front page, I'm still different. Mm-hmm. I'm still winning, right?
Yep.
So that's something I've considered and I've always had on my list. I think I have the niche for it. Yeah. But I haven't done it.
I've been doing it now. I've got for one term I just saw today, I have the featured snippet and the position under it for the best affiliate keyword. So I earned the top two spots.
Awesome. That is so epic.
Stuff like that. So I'm building out little networks like that. It makes sense. If you're putting the time in, you may also just dominate that one niche. I mean, you've got so many damn sites. If you just had even just like three or four within the same one and you've done the keyword research, you've done it once. So you know exactly what's ranking. Within that,
you know, it would be a really interesting experiment. Make one of those sites just completely AI generated and see what happens.
Mm. Exactly.
You just gave me a new project.
See if you can outrank yourself. Yeah, I just filled up the to-do list for today as well.
Thank you.
But yeah, that would be interesting. And I mean, if you're juggling all those sites, it could be something worth doing. Surely it would. I mean, especially if you have private affiliate deals and stuff like that with certain things. So I mean, do you get better affiliate rates in those? In that niche. So even if you're acquiring sites in that niche, you can pretty much increase the revenue instantly by swapping out affiliate links. Like, there's so many positives to it.
I like that.
Yeah. And then you can...
You gotta really... Now, do you feel like you really need... See, when I talk to people, I kind of like, okay, so you either really need to love it or you need to be able to suck it up because you know what the end game is and you know you're going to be, or you need to be able to have enough money to outsource it that you don't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Like, but a lot of people getting started, like, don't have the capital to do two or three, right? They really just need to do it all themselves. I'm like, well, your first affiliate site, you better love. Like, you better love your first niche site because you're going to spend a lot of time there.
Yeah, for sure. But if you're doing it in something that, I don't know, it's your career, was your career, or you're an expert in, or whatever it is, you can nail that out. And yeah, especially where, as I mentioned, if you have the private affiliate deals as well to just quickly increase.
I'm going to be registering domains for the rest of the day now.
Stuck on Namecheap or GoDaddy auctions for the rest of the day.
Basically.
That's the problem. GoDaddy auctions will suck up time if you sit there. And you start
it's such a time suck. It really is.
and you pass it off as work too.
Of course it's work. It's work, yeah.
Oh my gosh, it doesn't get you anywhere. But either way, you obviously talked about with the rest of the portfolio of sites, how do you juggle your time between them? Like, how do you know which one you're going to work on for the day or for the week or whatever?
So, you know, that's something I'm still working on. Like, I will be honest, there is a bunch of deprogramming you have to do when you leave the more traditional workforce. And part of the cool part is exactly what you just said. Like, you get to work on whatever you want. So I'll tell you what I did yesterday, actually. I sat down with my planner and I wrote down like my goals for the week and what sites I was going to work on, et cetera, et cetera. And I've noticed personally, like, I'll go really hard on a site for a while, like a week or two, and I'll just be like, I'm so sick of this. I'm just going to go to a different one. So that's a big part of I work really well by being able to like frequently switch the context, right? So I'll go hard on something till I can't take it anymore, and then I'll just go to something else and I'll keep cranking, right? Otherwise, I'll be like, oh, I can't take this anymore. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm not going to get anything done. So I'll focus, you know, it depends. It really depends. But like, it's like, okay, what is kind of my goal for the month, quarter, year? Where do I want to be? And I did all that at the beginning of the year. So I'm working mostly on the sites that bring me money now, and I'm trying to monetize them better. And like I said, I'm kind of working on that next level crop of sites that I want to build to higher traffic views and get some display ads on, right? Because I do like the, you know, a lot of people refer to this as like passive income, especially with the display ads. And while, yes, you're making money while you sleep, it's not necessarily completely passive because you still need to do things, right? You still need to be updating your content or publishing content or doing social media and stuff. So it's not like you never have to work. You still put in the work, as we talk, but you do get that kind of work-life balance to do whatever you want. So like, let's say if I was going to work on my chicken site today and I wake up and I'm like, I don't feel like working on the chicken site, right? Like if it was the corporate world and I had a meeting, I'd have to go to it anyway, but I'm like, all right, I'll work on the chainsaw site instead. No big deal. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, I'll set my goals for the week and what I want to work on, but I also kind of give myself grace and pivot because I am mistress of my own destiny. And if I come across something cool that I think would work better from one of my sites, or something's popping in the news or becoming popular, or there's a trend someplace, I'm going to go hop on that because I can and I have the flexibility to.
Yeah. No, I'm in the same boat as you as well. Like, I'll maybe write for one of my sites and be like, I just don't want to write anymore on this topic, and then move over and
exactly
and just do that, and then I'll come back and go back and forth, or something will pique my interest and be like, oh, I'll write about that, and I'll just go down the rabbit hole of whatever it is. So
the internet, the I love a good internet rat hole. I've been in a AI internet rat hole lately. So I'm into the ChatGPT, I'm into the images as well. Mid-Journey with Stable Diffusion, all that kind of stuff. Are you creating images
for your site through AI?
Not necessarily. It depends on some of them. Like, I'll do some pretty background stuff for like Pinterest pins and stuff. But I will say, like, I think you could get away with it in some cases. Like, personally, like I said, I have a couple food blogs. I would not be comfortable doing food images. Because, like, I don't know. Like, if I feel like if someone is going to cook a recipe, they expect a certain thing, right? So it's not going to look like what you're telling them to cook. Like, that's just not right to me. But it's good for, like, Pinterest stuff. It's good for just, like, you know, a fun animated feature image and stuff like that. It depends on the niche, but you can definitely find ways to work it in, right? And I know a lot of people out there, I've seen a lot of people out there going, like, they go look at a stock photo and, like, the alt text, and they'll put it into, like, the AI image thing to get something similar or something like that.
Interesting.
My big thing is it has to, like, either be cartoony because it fits there and it doesn't matter, or it actually needs to be a real representation of what you're presenting, right? Like I said, I'm just, like, very, like, I don't want to, like, mislead people or anything like that. I just don't feel right about that at the end of the day, personally. But it's just, like, fun to mess around with, too.
Because I haven't played
around. Oh, you can make it real. You can make it real, real. It's pretty crazy. I've seen some interesting stuff. I've done some interesting stuff just for fun to play around with. Like, here's a, like I said, I like to cook. The other day, I was, like, describing my dream kitchen. And, like, I was using tags like photorealistic and, like, lifestyle magazine layout and stuff like that, and trying to get it to make me a kitchen that I, like, really wanted. So I find it relaxing, actually. Like, it's a good way to blow off steam. Like, I'm going to go mess around and make myself into, like, an anime character or something like that. Yeah. Like, it's just fun. So I've been into that, and kind of, like, the next thing in AI world people are talking about is, like, kind of, like, you know, you can kind of get a prompt from an AI and then give it the prompt, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a thing people do, kind of automating it and just having kind of more autonomous kind of AI type stuff I've been starting to dabble in. And that's a bit of a science experiment on, like, the code stuff and getting everything to work right and stuff like that. But like I said, I have a tech background. So even for me, it's a little science experiment, because I'm, like, out of practice in some of this stuff. I'm like, I installed Linux for the first time, and I don't know how long the other day. I'm like, I don't even remember how to use this. But, like, it was like riding a bike. It all came back. So, like, I like playing with some of that kind of stuff just because, like I said, I have this techie slant. And I found AI, like, a good partner for brainstorming sometimes, quite honestly, even for the blogging stuff.
Yeah. No, that's true. Does the recent changes, or the potential upcoming changes in, I guess, AI search engines, like on Google releasing their AI, or trying to release their AI stuff and announcing they're going to have an AI search engine, all sorts of stuff, and Bing going down the AI route, does that potentially change? Or are you thinking about almost changing the way you monetize or at least do blogging? Because it sounds like a lot of your stuff's done through display ads.
I have a decent amount of display ad stuff.
Does that worry
really.
You?
Not really. I think it's too early to be worried. Like, I'm definitely keeping my eye on it. But like I said, one of my big things, especially my goal for this year, is different methods of monetization, right, beyond display ads. So display ads are nice. I like them a lot. But I've always done affiliates, but, you know, getting into some of my own products and spaces and things like that, like, that's something I'm definitely really looking at this year. I feel like it's too early to say either way for the search engines getting involved in things. Like, what was it? Yeah. Elon Musk, I think, just started his. So Elon Musk was part of OpenAI back in the day, actually, and like had something to do with founding it or something like that, I think. And then was like, eh, whatever. And now he's all angry, I guess, because he's like, oh no, now this AI is taking off. It's evil. But then he's starting his own AI company or something like that, too. So it's kind of like the Hunger Games of AIs and all this stuff right now. And I think we just really need to see how it all shakes out. I don't think it's going to be like an overnight, it's going to change the world thing. I think it's going to be something gradual to keep an eye on and just see how it all kind of evolves. Like, one thing I have noticed, and because I just like follow algorithm updates and stuff like that in Google, because I find it fascinating, like the way this stuff works, right? Like, I have a programming tech engineering background. And like, you'll set, like, they'll see a Google, you'll read in, like, you know, search engine news or something, there was an update and it was rolled back and blah, blah, blah. But if you really like dive deep into the quality of the SERPs after some of these updates, like, you put in a search term and the intent is just like wrong. It's like not even close. So stuff like that, because you got to remember, these search engines, again, or I don't know if I would call them AI, they're certainly intelligent. They're code at the end of the day, and there's people kind of programming them and things like that, and people make mistakes and all this kind of stuff. So it's important to keep an eye on. I think it's going to be interesting how the AI space kind of evolves, especially with the search stuff. Remember, Google pretty much dominates the search engine industry right now. could this be an opportunity for Microsoft or something like that to kind of get in a little bit more with Bing? Maybe, we'll see. Like I said, I'm watching it, but I'm not like freaking out or anything yet. Yeah. If I freak out, I will let you know, but I'm not there yet.
No, good. You mentioned around batching content as well. Do you have a strategy around content publishing? Are you trying to fill out categories or silos, as people call them, within the site first? Or are you just doing what you like?
So I am very big on topical authority / content pillars. That is like one of my favorite tactics. It always has been, just kind of go figure out a topic and exhaust it. And I'll batch those, right? I'll say, okay, this pillar is going to have X amount of posts. I'll go do all the keyword research. And then I might break that down. Like, I like groups of five for some reason. So I'm like, all right, if I'm going to write 50 posts, I'm going to do 10 groups of five. I'll do all my keyword research. I'll be a nerd and color code my Google sheet, so I know like what color is in each batch and everything like that. And then I'll just start kind of working through my list. I will say, based on how long that takes you, it's important to kind of check in on your keyword research every once in a while. Because even if it's been like 6 months since you did the initial research, it could be different now. So I will do a bunch of upfront keyword research for a bunch of different pillars. But before I really start cranking on a topic, I'm going to go back and validate that again, right? Just because I want to make sure if things haven't changed too much, or, you know, suddenly it's really more competitive, maybe I don't bother that. But I do like the topical authority kind of content pillar thing. And I like it for trying to grow your traffic as well. So I'll look at, you know, top 25 posts on a site, what's coming from Google, and are there certain types of posts that are doing really well? And I'll go write more in that pillar. Mm. Or if I say, yeah, I have, oh, look, wow, I have three posts about chicken doing really well. Let me go write more chicken recipes or chicken whatever, or how to raise chickens, who knows? So I'll go look at that kind of stuff. And that can be a really good guide on your content strategy. Because I think a lot of people, especially if they're newer, kind of struggle with that and kind of the SEO thing. Like, so interesting thing, I've always gotten SEO. And even though I've been in the tech industry and an engineer, like I've worked for companies, right? And I've ended up naturally working with the SEO teams at the companies I worked for to write content for when I was working, right? And I had some of like the top articles or whatever on really weird niche topics in my technical area of expertise, right? Because we did the SEO research and then I wrote to it. A lot of people kind of resist that, I've noticed. Like, I just want to write what I want to write, and I want to write what I feels good and blah, blah, blah. That's great, but you're not going to get anywhere with that. So unless you're able to take that SEO and those keywords and kind of put it in a way that makes sense for you, just kind of the I'm going to write whatever I want and sticks to the wall might work to a certain extent. Like, it's better than doing nothing, right? But there's something to be said for doing your research on content up front and then kind of writing to that and keeping yourself accountable to try to grow. But, you know, at the end of the day, we want to enjoy what we're doing. So, every once in a while, go write that post where you didn't do any research, right? Just go write what feels right. Write what will serve your readers. If it doesn't do well on Google, it might do good on Facebook or Pinterest too. And if you go back and look at that post in Search Console in 6 months, you might surprise yourself. You might be like, wow, I was really close to a lot of stuff here. Let me go update that and put it in a little better context now that I have some of the ideas of what this content could rank for. And that could be a game changer too. So it's definitely like a balance of, you got to play the game, you got to write for SEO, but you know what, every once in a while, do something fun too, because we want to have fun doing this, right? No one wants to be a blogger and be miserable doing it, right? This is the thing people want to do, right? So there's definitely like a, you know, kind of this aspirational content thing where, I'm still going to do what I love, whatever, even if it's not SEO targeted, whatever, because it feels good and I'm serving my readers. And that's just really, it's important to balance your content strategy that way, because it can get really boring really fast just writing about chicken all day long. We're like, oh man, now I'm going to go make chicken for dinner. Are you serious? Like, more chicken? No more chicken, please.
I think we all fall into that boat too. But how are you internally linking between these posts? Do you have a strategy in place, or is it just whatever comes up in the text you're looking to link between?
So I'll make sure that I'm linking all the content in the pillar together really well, but I cheat and I use Link Whisper too, just because I'm like, whatever. And especially if you get a site, or you bought a site, or you have an old neglected site that you never bothered with doing any of that, it's a really good way to get up and running. But like, I don't blindly take recommendations from any tool. Like, that's just me. No matter what it is, if I'm using a tool for something, I'm gonna have an understanding of what that tool is doing for me. so then I, as me, can validate what that says. Like, so for example, I don't even know how long I went before I paid for a keyword research. Actually, I could tell you because it was right after I took Doug's course and I finally sucked it up. It was 2019. So I went from 2014 to 2019 using free keyword research tools and doing it manually. That's a long time. And then I started with a keyword research tool and I'm like, this changed my life. Why did I not do this earlier? But I already had an understanding of what to look for and what made a good keyword and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So yeah. It's important anytime we're using a tool, whether it's an AI writing tool or some a WordPress plugin to help us with something, we should always understand the theory of why we're doing something, right? Don't ever take recommendations blindly for some tool because it looks like it knows what it's doing, right? Always understand what it's going to do for you. Because that's just going to help you be a more well-rounded blogger and understand where everything is coming from and help you come up with your own strategies.
No, exactly. And learning that skill is, once you've learned that skill, you've got it for life while you're creating
ever,
a new site.
Right? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a good skill to learn, and doing it manually is a good place
There's
to
really not too. A lot of shortcuts in this. Like, you can start, once you have that foundation, you can start using tools to speed things up. Oh, keyword research tool. Link tool, like all this kind of stuff. But like, there's no substitute for getting a good foundation, and there's no shortcuts, right? It does take time. You're not necessarily going to have magic overnight, and that could be hard at the beginning, right? It's hard to kind of keep up that momentum when you're just getting started. You're not necessarily seeing the results.
Yeah. You mentioned socials as well. Are you leveraging social media for your sites?
Yeah, probably Pinterest the most. And that's like a weird fascination of mine because it is essentially a search engine, a visual search engine. And okay, this is going to be nerdy again. I don't know if they still have it, but a couple years ago, they were updating the Pinterest engineering blog like really frequently to the point where like I read the Pinterest algorithm and how it works and stuff like that. And I really enjoyed that. So I really like Pinterest because it is very much a search engine, and I like SEO in general. So I do Pinterest. I don't do Facebook or Instagram as much as I should. I'm going to be honest. I find them to be a time suck and draining, and I don't particularly enjoy it. I think I should be doing more, but I'm not. There's tools that can help you automate this where you can kind of like write a post and have it go across all the different networks and stuff like that, like a social post. I probably should be doing more of that, but I don't because I don't. It doesn't bring me joy. I need to work on it bringing me joy, especially Instagram, right? Like I said, there's different ways to monetize. And if you can grow a nice Instagram account, you can definitely make some cash that way, right? With sponsored posts and sponsored deals and stuff like that. And that's not an area I ever really went down before because, quite frankly, when I was working full time, I just didn't have the time to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's like on my list of things I really need to take a deep dive into and examine and figure out, you know, what sites would this make sense for to get, you know, potential sponsored deals. And I actually didn't start doing sponsored content until very recently. It's a great way to make money. But again, for me, I was more focused on, okay, I'm going to work on the SEO and the content and stuff like that. And I didn't necessarily have the time to deal with the sponsored stuff because there's negotiations and stuff like that and reaching out and blah, blah, blah. So I like blogging an hour a day, that's sucking up a lot of your time if you're trying to do that kind of stuff. But it can be really good money. That's something I plan on exploring more as well.
Do you want to maybe dive a little bit into the Pinterest algorithm? What are you doing to rank there?
So the first thing there is pretty much your keyword research, right? So it's a lot like Google. You put in a keyword, Pinterest has auto suggest, and it will start giving you ideas, right? So if you start typing chicken recipes for, you're going to see a bunch of stuff pop up after four, and that's all indicative of, okay, this is what people are looking for. And then when you actually say chicken recipes for dinner and you get the results, the top pins that you see are, of course, the highest ranking pins. So then you go look at the pin and say, okay, what kind of image? Like a lot of times you'll put a term into image Pinterest and almost everything will look the same, right? So it's kind of like almost like Google and search intent. If the search intent for a key for side dishes for chicken is a list of 50 side dishes for chicken, I'm not going to write a recipe on mashed potatoes and try to rank it as a side dish for chicken, right? Because when people are typing side dishes for chicken, what they want to see is a list of things to make. They don't want to see my mashed potato recipe. So Google's never going to show them that, right? It's a lot about user intent, and Pinterest is the same way. So if you're looking at a lot of pins that, like, you'll see they almost look similar, you know, different people cooked them for chicken recipes, so they look similar. And that's what people are expecting to see when you put chicken side dishes for chicken in Pinterest. So you have to kind of almost play the game, but then it becomes, how do I differentiate myself enough to catch someone's eye? So it's like, you know, the Pinterest title, the description, the board it's pinned to, all that kind of stuff, and just start kind of playing and A/B testing what types of images work well on your account. What are other people doing with those search words? What does work? What doesn't work? Because I can tell you, I'll put in a term in Pinterest, and I'll look at the results. I'm like, oh, I would not have done that way. I would have come up with a completely different image and no one would have clicked it, because when people are searching for this, this is what they want to see, because Pinterest has learned over time that when people type the search phrase in, this is what they want. So that's what they're going to show them. So a lot of it, it's just like Google, right? You got to play the game.
Mm. Interesting. You mentioned about the images as well. Does that mean, for example, if they show like cartoon drawing images for those posts, that you should do the same? Or
that's what I've been doing, and okay, I've been doing pretty good doing that, right? Okay. Just kind of like, okay, if you put a certain text in and it's like just really clear fonts and stuff like that, and like sometimes you'll put a term in and it's really wordy or whatever, and it's just like, you know, images with really clear fonts on it, I'll do stuff like that. Like, I try to kind of almost play the game, and it seems to be working pretty well for one of the sites I'm working on. And in general, it's just like I said, kind of getting used to it. But I will say this, if you don't have a social sharing plugin on your website, right, if someone can't browse your website and pin your images, you are doing yourself a huge disservice. Because if you start diving into Pinterest and where your traffic is coming from, a lot of times it's actually coming from other people's pins of your stuff. So like the natural tendency is like, let's say I'm looking at side dishes for chicken and there's a really pretty picture of mashed potatoes, I might just pin that for later, right? So I can come back here. So if you don't have a social sharing plugin on your site, I highly, highly encourage that, so people can just kind of pin it as they're going and that kind of stuff. If your audience is on Pinterest, right? I hope I don't speak wrong here or anything, James, but traditionally the Pinterest audience is very female.
Yeah.
So for example, I can tell you, like, my tech site, I tried years ago to take a run at Pinterest, but a lot of it is very technical how-to content that people would look at 9 to 5 to do their jobs. Yeah. Those people aren't on Pinterest, and it's a tech industry, so there's a lot of guys there. They're not going to Pinterest to learn how to configure something, right? Yeah. So a lot of it is knowing your audience well and knowing what platforms they're on, and that's when you spend your time, right? If I say, oh, my audience isn't on Pinterest, like, don't bother. Just don't even bother wasting your time. But if you start seeing, oh, my audience is on Facebook and Instagram, well, that's an indicator maybe you should spend some time there. So just be, you know, socials take time. And before you go down that path, just make sure your audience is there first. That's kind of the big advice I have. Because, like I said, not everything will lend itself to Pinterest.
How do your RPMs compare then? Pinterest traffic versus Google traffic. Is there a difference?
Mine, personally, I've noticed Google is always a little bit higher, but they're not too far apart. That's just me, though. I think it's different for every niche, every website or whatever. But my Google is always a little bit higher.
What percentage of traffic are you getting from Pinterest then?
It depends on the site. One site I just acquired was like, I think it was like 75% Pinterest traffic. And that's not something usually I touch. Yeah. Usually I'm like, yeah, no. But I looked at it as, I'm like, you know what, I need another fun project. And there's a lot of really good content here that isn't really written with SEO in mind. So this is a great candidate for me to go optimize that content. So a lot of it is Pinterest traffic, but I'm already starting to see a little bit of an uptick, but I plan on changing that over time. It's nice to have, but it's kind of like, it goes back to risk and diversification, right? Do I want to be 50-50 Google Pinterest? Do I want to be 75-25 Pinterest Google? Like, it all depends on people as individuals and risk profile, risk tolerance, whatever. I like to diversify traffic as well, right? Because if I get hit in one area, hopefully I won't be hit in all areas at the same time. But it really depends. And I know I haven't had this happen because a lot of my sites are usually pretty balanced, if not heavy on the organic side, but I have heard that ad networks sometimes don't like a lot of social traffic and they want to see like a better balance of traffic and stuff like that. But that's not something I have personally come across. It's more of an anecdotal thing I've read about in Facebook groups and stuff like that.
Yeah. Is there an ad network that you prefer to use?
So right now I have a lot of sites on Mediavine. I actually just started testing out Ozoic for a couple of my sites in like that 10K range. Quite frankly, I have a lot of people who, again, earlier in their blogging journeys coming to me, and I figured, let me test Ozoic out and see how it does there. So far, so good there. And that's pretty much what I've been using so far.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, because obviously that's pretty much the main two most people are using anyway. And then once you're a Mediavine, right, you can, I think your other sites can get in at 25K.
Not anymore. Oh, no, they changed it? No, it's 50K or bust. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
For years. I actually, it was funny. Funny story. My college roommate also is a blogger and a food blogger, and we reconnected over blogging like, I don't know, a couple years ago. And she got one of her sites in right before they changed that rule. And like my site was like a little behind her, and I just like missed the threshold and I didn't get in at the lower traffic thing. But no, they've actually changed the rules. And it's pretty much like, yeah, 50K or nothing. And it's sessions, not page views too.
Yeah, because AdThrive still does theirs. You do 100K sessions, but you get your second site, and I think at 30.
And that is, I got to be honest, that's pretty intriguing for me with some of the sites I'm working on. I'm like, do I just make a run at AdThrive and give them a try too? And like I said, I'm weird. I like to try things, and I don't have experience there. So that's something I'm considering as well.
Yeah,
I'll try any tool. I'll try any website. I'll try any like weird SEO thing I read about. Like, why not? It's fun.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you can get your other sites in at lower thresholds
on exactly.
Like a premium ad network. It's especially if you've got 22 sites. It's probably worth doing.
Got a lot of sites. And it's a lot of people will be like, how do you do it all? Why are you doing it all? And I think that a lot of people are right. I do have a lot of sites. And if I focused on less, I would see results faster, maybe. But I also, for me, this is very much a long game in building a portfolio over time. So I'm very much playing the long game. And it does get frustrating because I'm like, I just want more sites, blah, blah, blah. But I'm definitely looking at this as a kind of long, slow march to get to where I want to go versus, I'm just going to like hit this one site. Because I could, right? I'm just going to hit this height. I'm going to hit this site and I'm going to slam it and whatever. But like I said, I'm very big on being risk adverse and kind of having a diversified portfolio and different niches and all that kind of stuff. So for me, it's very much a long game building this portfolio.
Yeah. I'm with you. It's interesting. A lot of people say, you know, if you focus on one thing, you can give more to it and build it faster. But I'm thinking how I work now. If I just had one thing, I don't think I would build it faster.
I'd be bored.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to.
I'd be so bored. I would be like not working half the time because I'm like, I can't take it anymore. I'm bored of chicken. I'm bored of chainsaws. What am I going to do next?
Yeah, exactly. Or you've done everything. I don't know. You've done the content. You're doing YouTube or something like that and social posts. But there's still time after that you could be doing something
else. So go work on a little pet project site. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, too many pet projects. I have like, I'm like the crazy cat lady of websites, right? Like, oh, that looks like a fun project. Like, what am I doing?
Yep,
and I have more domains I haven't even started yet. I've registered them. I'm like, oh, that's my next pet project. Like, what are you doing?
What are you doing on off-page? Are you buying links for any of these sites or are you just content only?
No, I'm content only. And I've noticed that if you write the right type of content that's very informational, the backlinks also come. I will say that I hate dealing with backlinks, and that is probably my weakest area. And I've talked to multiple people about this. They're like, Melissa, off page. I'm like, I know, but I don't like it, so I don't do it. That's something I keep on being like, oh, I should put more time into it, but I haven't, and I should. Like, do as I say, not as I do. So everybody should pay attention to that. But I personally don't, and I probably would see more results faster if I did. But I don't know. It's like just not my thing. I like the on page so much that. And I gotta be a more well-rounded SEO person, I guess. What's your opinion on that?
I'm links all the way, but I don't. Depend. I do some on my own, but through just relationships and stuff that I have, with different sites and businesses and stuff like that. But other than that, I'll buy them all day if I need to, or Link Exchange or Harrow or whatever it is.
Yeah, Harrow's interesting. That's something I've been thinking about.
You just did it while it's free, so you may as well.
I know, right? Yeah, so I should spend more time on links all day and all night, but I don't.
Another thing for your to-do list.
I'm not even joking. Like, I have a piece of paper here, and I'm writing my to-do list as we talk.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I think that brings the conversation to a close. I think that's everything I wanted to ask you there, Melissa. But where can people find you and see what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. The best place to probably find me is my website, melismadigital.com, and I'll send you a link over, James, because
perfect.
I didn't name it well, right? Melissa and Melisma. People are like, did you spell that wrong? I'm like, no, I was one class away from a music minor in college, and it's a musical term, and I'm a nerd. That's why I did that. Probably didn't think it through. That's the best place. I have been trying to do more on YouTube, getting into a better habit there, so you're going to see more blogging videos from me there, and maybe one day I'll take a run at the Instagram, we'll see.
Perfect. No, well, thanks for coming on, Melissa. We'll put that in the description for the listeners, and I appreciate having you on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.